ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you think you'd never be caught out by disinformation? Well, cast your mind back. Remember that big story about the bedbugs at the Paris Olympics? Well, that was actually a very effective Russian disinformation campaign. So effective that most people still believe it to this day. G'day, it's Hamish McDonald here. And I've learned that disinformation can be surprisingly subtle and hard to spot. If you want to join me interrogating the dark world of disinformation, stream The Matter of Facts now on ABC iView.
Donald Trump is in the midst of a messy war with Iran, but at the same time, his sights are set on Cuba. The US leader says he'll be having the honour of taking Cuba, which has been crippled by an oil embargo President Trump imposed earlier this year. Today, Lillian Guerra, Professor of Cuban History at the University of Florida, on Trump's next move. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Lillian, Donald Trump, he has a lot going on at the moment with the Iran war, but he keeps also talking about Cuba. I mean, he's talking about it a lot, isn't he?
Yes, no doubt. And it's concerning in so many different ways.
You know, all my life I've been hearing about the United States and Cuba. You know, when will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be a good honor. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah.
So Donald Trump, he wants Cuba, to be the next Venezuela. He wants to force a change in government, does he?
It's not clear what he wants, to be honest. Yeah. He says he wants to take Cuba, quote unquote.
Maybe a friendly takeover. It may not be a friendly takeover. It wouldn't matter because they're really they're down to, as they say, fumes. They have no energy. They have no money. They're in deep trouble on a humanitarian basis.
And effectively, that sounds like an imperial conquest that nobody, including myself and probably the vast majority of Cubans abroad and those on the island would want. Mm. On the other hand, he's taking advantage of a situation which has been created over the last 5 years by the current administration in Cuba, and it has reached a breaking point. They have had infrastructure crashes of a national nature. 5 times in 2025, we've had now 2 nationwide blackouts, just one this past week.
Yes.
Just extraordinary.
Cuba's national energy grid has suffered a total collapse, causing an island-wide blackout and leaving 11 million people without electricity.
And so you have just, you know, a kind of devastated scene anywhere you go in Cuba these days.
We've been without electricity for about 12 hours. And well, I plan to face the day as usual, just as all Cubans do, with great joy, because this is ours, this is our country. And we are proud of our country, despite the difficulties.
Even though many people find it encouraging that we're in dialogue with Trump, that the situation might improve, I really don't. I don't trust a dialogue with Trump. I don't trust Trump as a person.
Yeah, it must be seriously tough living there right now, as you say, these huge blackouts. But then also I read that the rubbish isn't even being collected.
Yeah, that is actually something that Cubans have had to live with now for the last 30 years. Mm. So you would have rubbish pickup once every 4 weeks sometimes in places like Santo Suarez, which is a neighborhood of Havana. So, you know, piles of trash have been something that Cubans have had to deal with on a regular basis all the time. But it is now to the point where there is no gas. So there hasn't been trash pickup in months in some areas of Cuba.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a danger in many different respects.
Yeah, sure is. All right, well, Lillian, there could be a showdown of sorts, I suppose, very soon, because there is this Russian tanker carrying crude oil, and it could be reportedly on its way to Cuba. That's what we think. Now, the US president does not want that ship to make it, does he? Because he has imposed an oil embargo on Cuba and threatened tariffs on nations that try and get oil there.
Yeah, I mean, so we have not had any oil coming to Cuba for now 3 months, and that it's been 3 months and 2 weeks. The Mexicans who were providing oil and other resources have withdrawn from that pledge, at least in terms of oil, because they fear the kinds of tariffs that Trump will impose. There were two different Russian oil carriers appeared about a week ago. One of them seemed to have been going a different direction and then turned back and is now headed towards Cuba. It's an extraordinary moment, and we don't know in which direction it's going to go. But I don't think that the Cuban people will benefit from anything that might come out of it.
Wow. Okay. But just to make clear, this Russian shipment of crude oil is aimed at alleviating this severe energy crisis in Cuba, which has been caused partly by an oil embargo imposed by Donald Trump.
Yes.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says political change in Havana is the only way the embargo will be lifted.
The embargo is tied to political change on the island. The law, the embargo is codified. They don't get subsidies anymore, so they're in a lot of trouble. And the people in charge, they don't know how to fix it. So they have to get new people in charge.
Now, Russia is a ally of Cuba.
Russia is an ally of Cuba as China is, but Russia has, other than sending tourists to Cuba and providing, you know, sort of random injections of some support so that, for instance, Putin sent back in 2014 a ton of gold to Cuba so they could refashion the Capitol building. I mean, this sort of window dressing is not real, genuine support for the regime at all in Cuba. Putin, I mean, even by sending this oil, you know, you don't have an immediate impact. You still have to refine it on the island.
Yeah.
And right now, their trucks are dry. I mean, just moving the oil to the distribution points is going to take some time. So even if they get there and are allowed to go through, we're still looking at another 2 weeks before the Cuban people feel any impact. And then the greater problem is that electrical grid keeps failing, and it relies on oil. You know, so one thing is connected to the other. The last part of that equation is that the Cuban people are not just suffering, they are outraged. And they, without electricity, they don't know what's happening.
But the U.S. Navy is in the region, in that area, isn't it? So it could intervene, particularly to stop this Russian tanker going through. It just sort of sounds all a bit fraught with danger.
I mean, all of that speaks to a kind of chaotic situation that neither the Trump administration would not be able to control, nor would they be able to predict, because they are just sadly uninformed about conditions on the island. I mean, Marco Rubio has never been there. I've been there more than 50 times.
Yeah.
You know, I've spent 30 years in Cuba. And even I could say that there are so many different factors. For people who live under censorship in Cuba, which is everybody, they can't tune into the national coverage, so they don't know what their government is telling them, and they can't figure out what's true or what not true. They have to rely on just word of mouth. Then you have potentially hundreds of thousands of people taking to the Florida Straits, you know, taking to the waters to come to the United States. And I actually think that that's probably one of the cards that the Cuban government, you know, has at its disposal, and that this Trump administration fears that they will play. They use their people as weapons when they need to. By that, I mean, they will send them out. They'll lift the Coast Guard and Cubans would take the bait because people are angry and, you know, they might go out into the streets and then we have chaos. So there is some leverage here. And the optics, as the media would like to say, of having the U.S. Navy intervene to either stop people from coming or to block the Russian tankers and to have the people themselves be somehow part of that scenario. I mean, all of that speaks to a kind of combustible situation.
Wow. Just explain for me, though, what does Donald Trump want to achieve through these oil embargoes? What's his end game here?
Well, I think he thinks that, in fact, the Cuban government will surrender and they will allow for a number of things to come into play. One of those would be not just the ability of Cubans in the United States or American investors to invest, but actually on the table kinds of joint ventures with American companies that would allow for American investors to make a killing, you know, and that's probably part one of this kind of vision of change that Trump has. The second part would be to have a compliant state. that would, over maybe a couple of years, move towards allowing for political opposition to form. I think nobody's talking about agriculture. And actually, I don't think Trump is thinking about that at all. But people in Cuba have never had any access to their land. You know, the Cuban state replaced what was really the corporate model of plantation economy that was run mostly by foreign interests and big sugar magnates on the island with state farms. And I see that Trump might be wanting, in his own way, he's not thinking about agricultural production, he's thinking about real estate. And I could see that the Trump administration would be demanding that the Cuban state would allow for foreign investors to buy and own land, not lease it.
All right, well, Lillian, of course, the Castro family controlled the country for nearly 70 years, Fidel and then his brother. But tell me about the current leader. Who is that and what sort of leader is he? And how do the Cuban people see him?
Well, Miguel Díaz-Canel is Secretary General of the Communist Party, and he also holds the additional role of being President of Cuba. He is effectively a declared successor of Raúl Castro. And then in 2018, when he becomes Secretary General, he has become really the face of the most repressive period we've seen in Cuba legally, in terms of legal codes and actual actions by the state, than we had seen since the 70s. I mean, he presided over a new constitution that lists the power of the Communist Party as irrevocable. It also lists like the duties of Cubans rather than the rights of Cubans. So the duties of Cubans include that they must show loyalty and they must defend the socialism as defined by the Communist Party. So it's a state that lives for itself. And Miguel Díaz-Canel really, I think, deserves the kind of hatred that most Cubans feel for him. So, yes, so Díaz-Canel, when he goes, however he goes, that will be applauded, I have no doubt, by the majority of Cubans.
Wow. Yeah, well, this, Lillian, of course, is a communist regime that has been embedded for so long, and it's certainly not the first time that America has tried to secure a regime change. So, I mean, do you think Donald Trump can actually do that, do what he did in Venezuela, and will that actually benefit the Cuban people in the end?
No, I mean, he cannot do what he did in Venezuela. Venezuela, you know, has even despite the repressive kind of dictatorship under Maduro and his stealing of the most recent election, it still has a pluralistic structure. It has an organized opposition. The state is not this embedded apparatus that controls the majority of the economy, you know, all the social services to the degree that they exist, you know, the public discourse, the TV stations. You know, the Cuban state is a communist state in all of its various dimensions. So you can't just take out one guy. You know, even if you had taken out Fidel Castro, you still would have been left with this massive standing army, a massive security state that is run by the Ministry of the Interior. And that includes, I mean, I would say that it's about a third of the population that are some way reliant on either material rewards or symbolic senses of power that they get from serving as directly security agents, members of the security state, or that they are informants on others, and they have lived slightly better than their neighbors because of this connection. You know, when times get tough, the Cuban state knows that it needs to reward its loyalists. This kind of reality that they have this huge apparatus means that, you know, Donald Trump can't send in a commando team and like take out Miguel Díaz-Canel.
So what's your prediction then? Do you think Donald Trump is really going to try this again, given, oh my gosh, he's already in the midst of a very, very messy war with Iran. And it sounds like if he tries this with Cuba, that could be equally as chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping and praying for the Cuban government, especially the diplomats in the Cuban government, to persuade the members of the military to come to some kind of a negotiated pause in this process that would at least allow for Cubans to recover a bit, you know, from their semi-starving, very precarious conditions right now. And that would mean that they would have to stall Trump at some level. And, you know, he is stallable. I think Marco Rubio actually would like to liberate, quote unquote, Cuba himself. And so I think he's thinking much more calmly and pragmatically. And what he needs is something that will make it look as if there is a concession to the United States. Time is not on their side now, but if they get it on their side, then you can add to Cuba's possibilities for a peaceful process of change, whatever that might take. But I do predict that we have either a dramatic outburst on the part of the Cuban people that neither government is prepared to handle, and then something dramatic will happen politically, or we have the Russian oil coming in and a softer landing that will enable some restoration of just normalcy in Cuba. And then we'll see what may come further down the pike.
Lillian Guerra is a professor of Cuban and Caribbean history at the University of Florida. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.